You're listening to Is Good on killradio.org. My guest today is Sarah Melson. We're going to start by listening to a track from her CD, Dirty Mind, and we're going to get into some interview and some live stuff, so stick around. It's going to be a great show. You're listening to Is Good on killradio.org.
Of what made me hurt, and I feel light as a feather now. At last I finally know my worth. I thought I'd never learn to be alone. Open all my windows wide, turn
listening to Is Good on killradio.org. My guest today is Sarah Melson. Sarah, how are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming in. We're just listening to your album, Dirty Mind, and this is your debut full length after some years in the biz.
That's right.
And let's just right off the top, where is this available? When did it come out?
Came out almost a month ago, I guess about 3 weeks ago now. It came out on Network Records, and it is, it's on iTunes, it's on Amazon.com, and it is in Amoeba, and it is in Virgin Megastore. It was funny, I walked into the Virgin Megastore, the new one on, you know, in the Hollywood and Highlands thing. I never go to the Hollywood and Highlands Mall, by the way, but
it's a very intimidating, scary place.
I really, really avoid that, but I made a point of checking out. You know, I wanted to go see where my record was, and so I came up there through the parking lot, which, you know, you walk in through the back door of the store when you enter via the parking lot.
Right, right. It's come up from underground,
as opposed to, you know, off of Hollywood Boulevard. And I walked in. It was the day that it was February 26th, which is the day my record released. And I walked in and I asked the manager where it was. And he was like, "Oh, yeah, okay, follow me." We walked to the front of the store, which is like the entrance right off of Hollywood Boulevard. And as soon as you walk in that door, there was like a huge display of my record right next to Janet Jackson.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, it was like...
And like a giant cardboard cutout of yourself. No, like animated, like waving.
Like, it was way more than I expected. So it is in Virgin. I don't know if that display is still up. Probably not, but it is there.
That must be one of those things that you'll remember for a while, like kind of those vindicating,
cool,
exciting things.
I really feel stupid that my cell phone is so old that it can't take pictures, because I would have taken one, but I didn't take one. But I also heard from a friend who went into Amoeba to get my record the other day that apparently it is sold out at Amoeba. So
fantastic.
Hopefully Amoeba will order more, or ask them to.
Now, how much of this is Sarah Melson, just a girl on a guitar doing singer-songwriter thing, and how much of it is the Sarah Melson project, the band, and the full sound?
Well, actually, that would be just a girl and her piano. I mean, I am playing guitar in here solo today, but guitar is definitely my second instrument, and piano is my first. It's just that, you know, usually when you show up to do something like this, there is not a piano waiting for you in the room.
Right, and I wouldn't want you to carry the grand piano up the staircase.
Hence, it was really convenient for me to just sort of learn guitar. But that being said, I've been playing for years now, so don't worry. It'll be fine. there are a couple songs on there that are more piano-based solo-type songs, but none of them are purely solo except for one, and that's Birthday Prayer, which is the second to the last song. Other than that, there are players playing on every song. So I actually play with full band on most of it.
But did you start just as a solo act, and then you found people to fill out the sound for you?
Oh yeah, I mean, absolutely, yeah. Which is why it's interesting. I've had several different band names over the years and different like band incarnations that I figured, okay, let's be a band and let's have a band name, and you know what I mean? And then it just kind of like over time became clear to me that I guess I'm just kind of a solo artist, and my players are going to change, and ultimately it's sort of the same as it always was, even from the beginning when I was just playing alone, except that now I have really excellent players who play with me, you know?
Right.
So it just, I mean, I've always fantasized about having an actual band, you know? But I think ultimately I've just come to embrace the fact that, you know, I'm a solo artist, and there you have it. And it actually is helpful, because it gives you a lot of flexibility in terms of traveling and...
Sure.
You know, if you need to play a solo show on your own for whatever reason, you can, and you can hold your own, and that's good.
And you're probably pretty comfortable now in the role of, you know, having the responsibility of writing all the songs and preparing all the material.
And then bringing it
to your other bandmates to kind of,
yeah,
as opposed to it being a full collaborative thing, you know?
It's very, like, it's interesting. I think there's pros and cons to everything, but... you know, when I decided to make my record, I looked around for a producer to sort of help me in writing, arranging, producing, recording. And it just, for whatever reason, you know, nobody really came to fulfill that role. And so I just decided to kind of self-produce and arrange. And, of course, I wrote everything myself. And then what happened was, you know, friends kind of came out of the woodwork and offered me their time and their expertise in terms of engineering, and sort of co-produced along with me on a couple of songs. And it just became this sort of amalgamation of efforts. And I think what's cool about the record is that it's, you know, it's almost like a Frankenstein bunch of record. It's not like I didn't go into one studio with one producer right. and emerge 2 months later with a record. It was just a process over time with like different people and different vibes and different places. And
I must say something about the quality or the something that comes from the music that people are going out of their way to participate in it. They want to be part of it.
No, actually, I mean, it's, I don't even know how to express how grateful I am to everybody who worked on this record. And I'm very lucky to say that, I mean, people who worked on this record worked way below their rates, you know, and went beyond the call of duty and went the extra mile to make this happen. So this nice. Was in a way it's like, you know, it's a solo artist project, but it was not a solo effort at all. And so I, if you read my thank yous, they're about, you know, a page
it's,
long.
It's the whole sleeve. It's just yeah. page after page of thank yous. Let's jump into a live song if you're ready. What would you like to play first?
Oh, I might as well play Dirty Mind, which is also the name of the record.
All right, whenever you're ready. My guest is Sarah Melson. You're listening to Is Good on killradio.org.
Summer's getting hotter, winter's growing colder, everybody's turning another. I'll be lying head to toe again with you, my friend. And time will stop and space will bend. Oh, please come find me with your
Wonderful start to the show. My guest is Sarah Melson. You're listening to Is Good on killradio.org. You know, it's interesting that I was listening to that song, and obviously we're talking about sort of indie rock, folk, pop, But there's definitely some elements of other things in there. There's an R&B sensibility to it. There's a blues sensibility to it, an Americana sensibility mm-hmm. to it. Mm-hmm. When you first started writing music, did you have a sense that you wanted to do a lot of different kinds of things instead of just that one thing?
My absolute main focus has been trying to defy categories, and it's not even something that I'm necessarily conscious of. It just I just really something about being kind of locked into a genre the way that, for example, on MySpace you kind of have to pick, you know, I think they give you three choices of mm-hmm. how to define your music. I switch those out like every other day. I mean, it's just really hard for me to pick three even. I just can't. I mean, I just feel like, am I rock? Am I pop? Am I blues? Am I Americana? Am I folk rock? Am I psychedelic? Am I what is it? You know, it's right. like I grew up listening to all of those things and more. So to say that I'm one or the other, I think a lot of people do pick one and they're just like, okay, this is my genre and I'm just going to fit into this cliched, you know.
And I guess, you know, the upside to that is it makes it easier to pitch yourself to the suits and when it comes to booking yourself to shows and
exactly.
things like that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm hoping that over time, if I supposedly, you know, touch wood, have a long, fruitful music career, I'm hoping that will actually serve me well in the long run. So in the short run, it might be harder to sort of get into the, you know, lock down into the genres, but... the nice thing about being able to sort of be a zealot of sorts and sort of travel between and across all boundaries is that then, you know, your opportunities become a lot more and you can actually flow between all those different crowds and different and appeal. The nice thing is too, I think my music actually appeals to a lot of different people across the board
for a lot of different reasons. Yeah,
yeah. I mean, you know, maybe not the heavy metal, you know, types, but you'd be surprised. I mean, looking through my MySpace page, there's just people from all different walks of life musically that are just for whatever reason, something about it, you know, struck a chord with them.
And you get to travel through all these different styles, both instrumentally and vocally.
Yeah.
What kind of came for you first? Was it singing or writing music or playing instruments?
Definitely singing, because I've been singing obsessively since I was a child. Playing instruments, my first instrument was piano, like I said, and it was classical piano, and it was, you know, parents forcing you to practice every day and having a, you know, it was the cliched old piano teacher tapping my wrist. And
it
was
a gateway drug for rock and roll.
Yeah.
Piano lessons.
But I'm glad that I stuck with it and I actually got, you know, all right at it. And from there, because I wrote so much poetry and so many lyrics, I wanted to start to put those to music. And I was so wedded to the idea that all I could play on piano was classical music that I just was paralyzed. I'd sit down at the piano and I just couldn't write a song at the piano. So I kind of had to pick up the guitar to express myself and my own words. And I taught myself the guitar, so I never had, you know, guitar lessons per se, although of course over the years friends have showed me neat tricks and whatnot, but you know, I mean, essentially I started to write on guitar, and then from there I went back to the piano and realized, well, wait a second, I'm so much better at the piano, I should be writing on piano. And so I kind of had to unlearn my piano technique and just literally just start with like basic chords, like, okay, this is where I want to go. It's
That's
not Bach, it's not Mozart, but this is where Sarah Melson wants to go, you know?
So you sort of learned how to write a song from the guitar perspective, and
exactly.
then you went back to piano, and that informed you on how to put a song together
right.
that wasn't just a classical piece.
No, I literally had no idea how to play piano without a piece of sheet music in front of me until I learned the guitar. And then I had to go back to the piano and go, oh, I get it now, you know?
Cool.
It's really weird.
Let's listen to another track from your CD. What do you recommend?
You know what? Why don't you... This one is kind of a little secret bonus track gem at the end. It's the 13th song, the lucky song. It's the acoustic version of Turquoise Sky.
You're listening to Is Good on killradio.org. My guest is Sarah Melson. We'll be right back.
Thank you.
On Is Good on killradio.org, hanging out with Sarah Melson, and we're listening to some tracks from Dirty Mind. And let's talk a little bit about playing live. What was it like for you the first time you got up there in front of a crowd and you were like, I'm Sarah Melson, these are my songs, this is what I do?
Oh my god. I think the first live show I ever played was at Genghis Cohen by myself. Actually, yeah, it was the first one. Dear God, I was so petrified. I was just really scared, especially because I couldn't really play the guitar very well. And like I said, it's so hard to find venues with a piano. So it was just kind of like, it was really brave of me, to be honest, to get up there and play at this point.
And had you put a lot into it, you know, in preparation, like anticipation of this big
debut?
Well,
yeah, but you know, of course I was just, you know, my eyes were just downcast, glued to the neck of my guitar the entire time. I never looked up once, but people loved it. They really loved that show, and
so that encouraged you to want
to
do more of that.
Keep going, and you know, finally I started looking up from my guitar and like actually looking at the audience. And now I'm happy to say I'm really just not. I don't really get that nervous at all. I love performing too. You know.
So what makes for a really good performance for you, in your mind, a good show? Is it the connection with the audience? Is it your technical ability to play?
It's both. I mean, I think, you know, once you've got, you know, once you've graduated to the point where you're just not effing up, you know, on stage, then you get to enjoy the next level, which is actually making an emotional connection with your own material. And if you're doing that, then the audience is going to pick up on that and have an emotional connection as well. I mean, I used to be so preoccupied with like, oh God, I'm going to this chord. I can't play it that well. You know, whatever it is, it's like you just don't want to have those fears because right. those fears get in the way of the song.
They take you out of the present.
Yeah. I mean, it's like my piano teacher used to say, you know, learn your scales until you don't have to think of your scales. You know, you're just playing your song. And so that's what it became. For me, it was just a challenge to get past the fear of the technical aspects of, like, am I too loud? Is the guitar feeding back? What's going on? You know? And then when you add a band into the mix, it's four other people you've got to worry about. Do they know their parts? Are they too loud? Are they singing in harmony? What's going on? You know? Did they come in too soon? Like, are they rushing? Are they... So there's so many things that are going through your head that you're thinking of at the exact same time. And the goal is to have nothing, have none of that going through your head. And just to be in that nirvana of that blissed out state where you're just literally feeling it. And more lately, I'm happy to report that I'm really accessing that state.
Nice.
Like a lot, almost all the time.
Did you kind of, you know, perfect your ability to go up there as a solo artist, just so you and a guitar, you and a piano?
Of course.
And then once you did that, then you added the band. And did you feel like you kind of had to start over again because you had to establish that level of nirvana with all these other people and being able to rely on them and trust them?
Oh, yeah, and vice versa. Because once I got used to playing with the band, then it was really hard to go back.
Oh, because you couldn't rely on that backup. Yeah.
And I couldn't just hide behind this great wall of sound that I had, you know, rehearsed and perfected and let them carry me. So now it's like, God, you know, I'm alone again. It's like without the band because, you know, even though I have tour support from the label, I don't have enough to be carting around a four-person band all over the country. So it's like, you know, frankly, I'm going to be playing alone a lot. And I had to really – it was kind of great in a way because I had to go back to sort of the core of and the essence of who I am as a musician and a person and just access that again – so that I can bring that to the stage. Because it's like, I think when a performer is alone, I mean, it can be almost more compelling because if you can really hold your own alone and get an audience to like shut up at the bar and turn around and listen to you, they're going to be so much more affected viscerally and emotionally than they would be watching a band. It's just kind of that way, you know?
And I guess jumping back and forth between these two ways of performing, you really get that opportunity to rediscover your music.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like, as a music fan myself, I'm always rediscovering music. You know, my iPod's got however many thousands of songs on shuffle, and then, like, the song will come up that normally I would skip over, and for whatever reason that day I'll listen to it, and I'll remember what it meant to me at that time and how it means something different to me now. And you get to do that with your own music, and that
absolutely
informs your performances.
So much so. And in fact, along those lines, for every song on this record, I have, God, 5, 6, 7 different multiple versions of every single song, from me alone on the piano, me alone on guitar, me on an 8-track with a violin player, me with a full band doing a huge pop version of it. You know, it's just, I mean, I happen to pick these versions for this record, but there are so many different, so many B-sides for the future.
Nice.
Yeah.
For the box set, the Sarah Melson retrospective.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Should we do another live song?
Sure. This one's called Hard Pressed.
All right, whenever you're ready.
Okay. Let me just check my tuning really quick. Okay. You're the king of downtown, you move around with your head in the sky. Sing to the clouds, leave the ground, you're ready to fly. But you're all alone, you're all alone. I got confused, I thought you loved me, I don't know why. Oh, you were just my muse, maybe someday I'll make you cry. When you're all alone, you're all alone. You're gonna be hard, hard pressed. Hard, hard pressed. So hard.
the city of your secret thoughts and your darkest fears. Oh, you don't even know me, you've no idea. Just wait a few years. Oh, and you're all alone. You're all alone. You're gonna be hard, hard pressed. So hard, hard pressed. So hard, hard, hard pressed to find a woman like me. Search the whole wide world over. Search the whole wide world over. Go ahead, you can search the whole world over. Just wait and see. You're gonna find a woman like me.
I bet you get a lot of guys giving you their phone numbers after that song.
I'm glad you picked up on the double entendre. For some reason, nobody picks up on that. It's so funny. It's like that was the whole inspiration for the song. You know, it's like, God, does nobody have as dirty a mind as I do? I'm really glad that you do, John.
Yeah, I'm notorious for it.
I mean, you know, the record is called Dirty Mind after all, you know? No, actually, girls love that song because it's such a, like,
it's a very empowering,
face, yeah, like, you know, breakup song.
Yeah.
So that's funny.
Along those lines, are there certain themes you like to come back to a lot in your music? Are there certain kinds of stories you like to tell or certain ways of telling stories that you can't seem to avoid?
Well, I've always been fascinated by people who can write in like a different character, like, you know, Bob Dylan or something. He's always like writing as like a third person or something. I don't know. I guess I've just never done that. But all my songs are just really on my sleeve, you know, really naked autobiography, basically. So they're just a way for me to cope with, like, different things in my life. Or a lot of times they're an expression of, like, an epiphany I'll have, and I'll want to share that. So I would have to say, from a selfish perspective, I write for myself first, you know. And then what happens is people can relate.
Mm-hmm.
So
you've sort of written the song for yourself, and then you arrange the music around so that they can access it, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you know, people write for different reasons and are inspired. Some people just write for fun. They're just like, I'm going to get up today and I'm going to just give myself a little task. I'm going to write about whatever, fill in the blank. I'm not like that. I have to be hit from, like, divine inspiration. So I go for quite a while without writing. And then all of a sudden, I'll go through some period in my life that's really rich, and I'll just be writing like 10 songs a day. It's
and they do
weird.
They just kind of come through you? Like,
yes.
You get an idea for a song and you got to write it down, you got to work
yes.
it out.
I will wake up in the middle of the night, and, you know, it doesn't matter how tired I am, I have to write it down. I mean, that's how it happens. Or like I'll be on a, you know, on a train and have to get a napkin and a pen. Like, it's just, when it hits me, it's just, there's nothing else more important than getting it out, you know?
And is it usually the lyrical content that hits you first?
Yeah. I you know, it usually comes out that way. When I'm playing an instrument, of course, I'll just come up with like a melody that won't have to do with any lyrics. But when I have an idea for a song, it usually comes about lyrics first. And then what'll happen is I'll try to I'll kind of like, it's almost like a puzzle. I'll sort of merge the words I've come up with like the melody du jour that I came up with that morning or whatever.
Nice.
So.
And have you noticed a kind of evolution in your writing? Are you writing in a different style now than when you started? Has it changed in any way, or have you just sort of perfected the style that you started with?
Well, I'm a way tighter and more sophisticated writer than I was at first. You know, at first I would just, I think that also comes from, I mean, I just didn't know enough chords to create the ideal song. So when you're learning your instrument at the same time that you're evolving as a writer, it's really challenging and it takes a lot longer.
So the better you understood the craft of writing music, the better your music writing became.
Yeah, for sure. You know, my writing is just a lot better now than it was when I started. Now, that being said, I have a few songs from the very first days that have made it to, they're not on this record, but I would say there's a handful, there's maybe four or five songs that I wrote, like, that are kind of like in the batch that were my very first ones that are going to be on my second record.
And is that second record already something you're working on?
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm not like recording it yet, but I'm getting all my songs together for it and sussing out, you know, where it's gonna happen and what's gonna happen. Yeah. No, I'm.
So like, you recently released this album,
right?
And you know, some people might take a break and just promote the album, and you know, well, it being a very cathartic thing. But you need to keep writing and keep making new material, huh?
Yeah. I mean, it's not so much that as it is. I have all these other songs that I've already written that
you owe it to them because they didn't make it on this album.
Right, exactly. I had to weed out, you know, just these ones for this record. So I want to work on those other ones and perfect them to the point where they're ready to go, and they're like 80% there. So I've kind of got my second record pretty much written. I want to add a few new songs to the batch. And of course, I'm not in the mode of recording it yet because as you said, I do have to promote this one. Go buy Dirty Mind immediately.
And on that note, let's listen to another track from it. What do you recommend?
How about Rise Up?
All right, cool.
Yeah. Oh, I have to tell you something funny.
Please.
This song is going to be in the season finale of A Biggest Loser.
No way.
Yeah.
Oh my God, my wife loves that show.
Okay.
And I, by proxy, have to watch it. So.
It's going to be on there. In the season finale.
Oh my goodness.
It's kind of an anthem.
So it's sort of an inspirational song. And
yeah, the verses have nothing to do with anything, but the chorus
is... It's not a song about weight loss.
No, no. But the chorus is you can probably understand why they picked it, so...
And was that... before we go into that, I'm just curious, like, what is that like for you, sort of seeing your music being applied to imagery that it wasn't necessarily intended for?
Oh, it's fantastic. It's amazing. It's fantastic. It's like... you know, my dream is to have every one of these songs licensed 1,000,000,000,000,000,000 times in every different context.
Nice. You're listening to Is Good on killradio.org. This is Sarah Melson. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Someday you will rise.
can have it all right now if you're not afraid. You'll go far, but right now here you are. Won't you have some faith in all of those dues you've
You're listening to Is Good on KillRadio.org. My guest is Sarah Melson. That's going to be so much fun to watch that episode with your song in it.
Yeah. Well, Feel It Coming was actually on Grey's Anatomy.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you knew that, but I got to watch that. It was on a couple times already. It was on December 6th, I think, and then it was on last week again. So, I mean, that was a trip watching that, you know.
It must be really great to get that kind of feedback, either from, you know, seeing the song used in something or... do you get feedback from your fans a lot? Like, you get a sense of how people are connecting with it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, with a show like Grey's Anatomy, I mean, once it aired on TV, I was definitely hit with a lot of action online, for sure. Yeah, definitely.
And do you have a sense of what you want your audience to get out of it? Like, you were saying how a lot of your music is very personal, and then people relate to that. Have you been able to get some of that feedback? You know, your song made me feel this way or that way?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's really cool because, I mean, you know, I mean, I think as an artist, personally, I try to express a certain vibe that is kind of coming from where I am on a personal level. So I hope that my music is inspiring and soothing at the same time. You know, I want it to inspire people with, like, faith, I guess, and hope. And that sounds cheesy, but I'm aiming to sort of help in some way with my music. And I think people do, they are soothed by it. You know, they do connect with it in that way.
Yeah, I mean, you can really tell when a song really works, when it sort of triggers this desire in a fan to want to give something back to the musician, either the CD or go to the show or leave a comment or something like that, just to say, like, you know, because there really isn't a lot of ways for a fan to, other than giving you money for your product, and I guess that's how the system works.
No, what's great about the internet now is that people, without having to spend anything, can go and write a review on iTunes, mm-hmm. you know, if they like the record, or they can go and, you know, write a comment on MySpace and they've connected with you in some way that way, or write a blog. I mean, blogs are huge right now. So, you know, it's all about spreading the word basically on a grassroots level. And that's kind of what I need right now, is for people to just basically just talk about it and tell people about it.
And has that been your experience sort of in LA, you know, so many musicians, so many shows, so many different venues and different mm-hmm. kinds of venues, mm-hmm. kind of building your audience? How has that been for you? Like, the whole marketing angle and getting people out to shows.
Right. Well, it really depends. I mean, I've had certain shows that have been absolutely phenomenal and just packed and just people coming out of the woodwork, and it's been great. I've had other shows where I haven't spent any time, like, promoting them or telling people, that are total duds, you know? So it just depends on... just depends on how much you put into it effort-wise, and it also depends on the night and the venue and... I don't know. Different factors line up, you know. But, I mean, I would say I don't really see the benefit to overplaying here unless it's for your own personal, you know, you just view it as like a rehearsal, like, you
to
know.
To perfect your
craft.
Yeah,
of course. Yeah. You know, I mean, the more you play in front of people, the better. If you're trying to do it from like a marketing standpoint, I wouldn't really bother doing that here. I mean, you know, unless you're playing like a significant show, you know, for
if it's not a special event.
Yeah, yeah. For example, I opened for West Indian Girl at Bordello, and like Metro Mix and The Fold co-sponsored it, and it was a huge show, and it was like a line around the block, and that was great, you know. But, you know, would I be playing like every other night at wherever, you know? At a certain point, you just have to pick your battles, you know. So I don't know. I mean, there are like little dives and stuff that I like to just get up and play at, you know, just for the heck of it, just try out new songs or something.
Well, I mean, that must be something you don't want to completely let go of. As your career kind of moves up, you still want that opportunity to just play a song without it being a pitch for selling your CD or a big event or a big promotion. Sometimes I think musicians, you know, they don't get that opportunity to play anymore. It's always performing.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly. It always has to mean something. Like, well, what kind of, you know, what kind of numbers are you drawing?
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, I hate that word draw. let's do another live song if you're ready.
Sure. I do want to check my tuning because I just put a capo on.
Oh, please, go ahead.
Sounds okay.
And where's the best place to go for the most up-to-date info on what you're doing?
Well, sarahmelson.com, and that's S-A-R-A with no H, and then M as in money. E-L-S-O-N, sarahmelson.com. Also, myspace.com/sarahmelson is also a good one. Yeah. And this song is called Never Been Hurt.
All right, whenever you're ready.
One day I didn't have a care, set my picture in the mirror and the color of my hair. I sang along to records about tomorrow. Now my hands are worn and my clothes are torn. A lot of my dreams have met with scorn. I don't have too much time left to borrow, but still I'm gonna love you like I've never been hurt before. Love you like I've never been hurt before. I'm gonna love you like I've never been hurt. I'm gonna start all over and know what it's worth. Love you like I've never been hurt before. Stubborn independence reminds me of myself. It doesn't make a lot of sense. It isn't very good for health. I know you wanna be alone, but I sure like talking on the phone. And I finally left my carry-on bag behind me. I'm gonna love you like I've never been hurt before. Love you like I've never been hurt before. Love you like I've never been hurt. And we can start all over and know what it's worth. Love you like I've never been hurt before. I'm gonna start all over and know what it's worth. Love you like I've never been hurt before.
My guest is Sarah Melson. You're listening to Is Good on killradio.org. That was lovely, Sarah.
Thank you.
Do you have a preference in terms of being the recording artist or being the live performer? Do you see yourself resonating with one role more than another?
It used to be that I vastly preferred recording. Really, really, really love recording. I think my happiest moments of my life, other than, you know, being madly in love or something, are definitely, among my happiest moments have been in the recording studio.
What do you like the most about being in the recording studio?
It's just the funnest thing ever. I just don't know how to explain it. It's just like, it's just the best thing ever. It's like, I just love it so much. It's really hard to explain why. I mean, there's something about having something to say and wanting to say it a certain way and expressing yourself via, you know, singing and playing and then having it recorded and hearing it played back to you. It's like, it's the most fulfilling thing that I can think of. It's almost like, I've never had a baby, but I would imagine it's kind of like that. And now I would have to say that as I'm more and more comfortable as a live performer, I'm having those kinds of euphoric moments more and more and more and more on stage as well. So it's really exciting because I'm starting to really come into my own as a live performer, and I can already tell that it's going to be a lot of years of loving it. So,
well, it's kind of like we were talking about before, and you get those opportunities to reconnect with your music. In the studio, you really are isolated. It's you and your music, and if you're working with another producer, they're just kind of there to help you. And
well, yes and no, but when you're every time I record, there's almost a sixth sense in your head where you're envisioning, you know, you're wanting it to land on as many people as you possibly can. Mm-hmm. So you're connecting. You're alone, in the studio, but you're also not, because you're singing it for posterity.
Right.
So your recording has to connect with as many people as you would in a live show.
And a lot of what people say when they say, oh, I love this song, they're really referring to, I love the song, the way it was recorded on that day.
Totally.
And on this CD. You
absolutely.
Know? And the song means many different things to you because you've played it live in all these different places.
Yeah, and you've played it also over time when, you know, whoever you wrote that about, it may not even still be around. So it's like you got to reconnect with whatever the song means on that day.
Right.
And that meaning is going to change over time. Like, you know, when you go see James Taylor and, you know, now, and he's 60-something and he's singing Fire and Rain, he's still killing it. I mean, he's still making you cry. But chances are the girl he wrote that about, you know, 40 years ago is no longer in his life, you know? So you just have to, I think, as a performer and in recording both, you have to really find that place where the song means something. Otherwise, you're just phoning it in, you know?
Yeah, well, then you can't do that.
No. People can pick up on that.
Definitely.
Real quick.
Do you have any upcoming shows you want to mention?
I do. I actually, at this point, only have one, but that will be changing shortly as I hopefully tour massively across the country. Working on that. Right now, I'm going to be playing in New York a week from tomorrow. It's April 1st, and I'm opening for George Stanford at the Mercury Lounge. So anyone who's going to be in New York or would like to tell their New York friends to go, that would be fabulous. And the show is absurdly early. It's at like 6:30 p.m. They're doing this special early night in general. So it's actually just me and George playing.
Cool.
I think he goes on at 7:30, and then the whole thing's over at like 8:30. But it should be awesome. Yeah.
And do you like touring? Do you like getting out and exposing your music to a completely different audience?
I do. I do. I really, really enjoy. I actually toured Japan a few years ago.
Wow.
I did an acoustic tour of Japan. Yeah. And that was probably one of the best experiences, just from a performance perspective, that I can remember, because it's so refreshing to be in front of audiences that are just dying to see you and are just so hungry to, you know, hear your music and get your CD, and they're so into it, and it's wonderful. It's like really, it's really neat to be like the new kid in town, as opposed to like, come to my show at Tangier again.
But yet, will we have some of that to look forward to, though, when you get back from New York? Are you going to do a couple shows in L.A.?
For sure. I wish I had some to announce right now. I don't, but, you know, please hit me up on MySpace and the website and you know, keep abreast of that. And there's an email list actually on the MySpace page, on the home page of my MySpace, where it's better to sign that because then you'll actually get an email, you know, about upcoming stuff. But yeah, please keep in touch.
Sarah, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thank you.
And why don't we sign off with one more track from your CD? What should we do?
Well, you know what we could do? I don't know if you want to do this, but you could play the version of the song I just played.
Sure. Be
and
happy
it's
to.
It's really different because it's on piano, not guitar. So yeah, why don't you play Never Been Hurt?
All right. That's track three here on the CD. And so drop by sarahmelson.com and myspace.com/sarahmelson for all the latest up-to-date info. This episode of Is Good will be available for download probably tonight or tomorrow off of myspace.com/thisisgood. And, of course, check out the beta version of the site isgoodmusic.com for information on all the artists who've been on the show. Sarah, thanks again.
Cheers. Thanks.
Set my picture in the mirror and the color of my hair. I sang along to records about tomorrow. Now my hands are worn and my clothes are torn, and a lot of my dreams have been met with scorn. And I don't have too much time left to borrow, but still I'm gonna love you like I've never been. Love you like I've never been hurt before. Love you like I've never been hurt. I'm gonna start all over and know what it's worth. Love you like I've never been hurt before. Your stubborn independence reminds me of myself. It doesn't make a lot of sense. It isn't very good for health. I know you wanna be alone, but I sure like talking on the phone. And I finally left my carry-on.